A championship Sunday in the books. We now know the Super Bowl matchup. The Rams beating the New Orleans Saints 26-23 in the Superdome in New Orleans. Game goes to overtime. And while it was a thriller and we should talk about the game in a lot of ways, there's one play that stands out. Of course, the no-call penalty that is going to be the headline story for days, weeks, if not months to come, years to come. To talk about it, to break down the game, Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post was there in New Orleans covering the game and kind enough to be on with us now. Hey, Mike, how are you this evening?
Good, Lori. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. So there's a lot to break down and talk about in this game, and you hate to make it about the officials, but you know, how can you not with that play? And, you know, where does this one, I was comparing it to the horrendous officiating I thought Bill Levy and the officiating crew did jobbing the Seattle Seahawks with Matt Hasselbeck as quarterback in that Super Bowl against the Steelers. Where does this not call, non-call rank, you know, in terms of importance of, you know, a penalty, a call, a non-call, in your point of view?
Well, I think given the context, Laurie, it's got to be the worst ever because it was a championship game, and literally, if the right call is made, and it wasn't a 50-50 call. It was,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just pass interference, but oh, by the way, he also had helmet to helmet,
sure.
So there should have been two penalties on the call in the play. And so what happens is, you know, if they call it properly, or even if they call it half properly, and call just one of those penalties. You know, the Saints are set up at five-yard line, inside the five-yard line. The Rams only have one timeout, so figure they'll run one play, the Rams will call timeout, and then they'll probably take a knee for, you know, the full 40 the next two plays. So that's 82 seconds that they're able to run out of the clock. By the time the Rams get the ball back, they have no timeouts. They're down to 25 seconds. I mean, it's going to take, you know, basically a miracle for them to be able to tie the game. And so of course, we're assuming that the kicker will make the field goal, but it's also going to be a, you know, a 20-yard field goal.
Sure.
So it's going to be less than an extra point. So all things considered, if that call is made, or if one of the two calls for one of the two penalties,
yep,
is made, the Saints win the game, and they go to the Super Bowl, and, you know, entire legacies are changed. I mean, you know, I think Drew Brees is a Hall of Famer anyway, but, you know, what about Sean Payton? I mean, is Sean Payton going to get in based on his one Super Bowl? I mean, you know, if he won two, I think he's a shoo-in. I mean, there's any number of things that can go from there. And I know, look, there are a lot of Rams fans who like to point out, after everybody was complaining about that, I mean, there was one obvious face mask penalty on Goff that wasn't called. And yes, there are penalties that are and aren't called on both sides of a ball during a football game that generally tend to kind of even out. But, you know, when you have one play that basically decides the game and it's that brutal a call, there's really no way to minimize just how much the impact was. I mean, look, it was a bad call in the Chiefs game, too, that kind of phantom roughing the passer penalty on,
yep,
Brady. But you know what? That, there was still plenty of time and still plenty of stuff happened after that to where you can't, like, target that and say, well, that was an awful call, and that was the call that changed the game.
That one,
I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah, that one to me, it was bad. You're absolutely right. That was a phantom call. But there, to your point, there are a lot of calls that don't go right, you know, one way or the other, and we feel even things out. When it happens like that at the end of the game, here's my question to you. NFL games are already long enough, and there's already enough replay and stoppages of plays. However, when you see, it feels like officiating has gotten worse, and when you see a no call like that, can you make an argument that whether it's the last 5 minutes of regulation, you know, of the fourth quarter and overtime, that if there, that, you know, that that there should be a replay or a challenge for, you know, obvious missed penalties?
You know, in theory, I would agree with that, but the fact is that, you know, once you open that Pandora's box, how do you close it? Do you mean, are you just going to keep it to pass interference penalties? Are you going to allow coaches to challenge holding calls that were or weren't made? I mean, they're suddenly you're on a slippery slope there, and you're right. Now these games are going to take 7 hours long because every play will be reviewed. I think, you know, look, I mean, the simple solution is to get better officials, and I know that's easier said than done. But, you know, I get it. The officials have taken taken heat in every sport for forever. But it just seems that in recent times, you know, especially NFL refs have taken a beating. And look, I understand it. It always seemed odd to me this theory that maybe you make the referees full time, because basically, you know, you're paying them full time wages to referees 16, 17, 18 games a year, which seems like good work if you can find it. But you know what? At some point, you know, maybe that's what you need. Maybe what you need is a constant rotating pool of referees that can keep up with the speed of the game. I don't know if that's the problem or not. But it surely does seem that we have more of these kind of controversies now than we ever did before. I mean, you know, you had the odd bad call, but, you know, and it seems strange that it should be that way, because you would think that replay would make officials sharper, because they're judged based on the calls they make and they don't make. And yet it seems that the profession itself as a whole is regressing almost.
Talking to Mike Vaccaro, who is in New Orleans, was covering the game today. You mentioned Drew Brees and the legacy, and obviously he's going to the Hall of Fame. In my opinion, he's a clear first ballot Hall of Famer. I always do talk about legacy, though, this time of year. And if Brees were to win a second Super Bowl, are we having a conversation with Drew Brees that is, you know, with two Super Bowls, is he in the conversation top 10, top 5 quarterbacks of all time?
Sure. I mean, especially when you consider, you know, when you throw the team accomplishment onto his individual resume, which is spectacular, it's hard not to, because then you start talking about some rarefied company. I mean, you know, how many quarterbacks have won, you know, two or more championships? I mean, you start talking about, you know, Peyton Manning won two and Eli's won two, and you know, it's a very select club. And then, I mean, I don't think anybody would deny that Brees has had a better individual career probably than Eli has.
Oh, way better. And it's not even in the same. He's a Hall of Famer there, but I'm talking about, you know, you mentioned the legacy comment. You get a second Super Bowl, and we're talking about, you know, the Mount Olympus, the all-time greats.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a shame because, you know, he's that good. This team was that good. You know, I mean, but, you know, here's the other problem, though, is the fact that, you know, they made it look easy getting up 13-0, and really, I mean, by rights, they should have at least been up 17 or 21-0 at that point. And you always get that sense, and then, of course, they allowed the fake punt, and you always get these benchmarks during a game when you realize that a team that probably should have put a team away didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you're the Patriots, because certainly the Patriots gave the same signals in their game because they blew a 14-0 lead, but nothing seems to rattle the Patriots or seems to come back to bite them. So they're an outlier. But certainly with regular teams, and that, you know, we saw that with the Saints, and I think that as much as anything, that's what Brees was kicking himself for afterward, was the missed opportunities, which if you take care of your business over the first, you know, 58 minutes of the game, then that call doesn't matter.
Yeah, and, you know, absolutely, you're right. It shouldn't come down to it. The Saints blew it. They should have been, you know, blowing this game apart. Credit to the Rams. Credit to Sean McVay. And the fake punt, to me, was the turning point in the game. The Rams are down. They're down 13-0. They seem, you know, they seem rattled by the noise. And then 4th and 5 from the 30, they go for it. You know, let's give credit the other way. Are we seeing with Sean McVay, you know, it'll be young versus old, are we seeing, you know, kind of a changing of the guard? You want to talk legacy. What does it do to Sean McVay's legacy if he wins that first Super Bowl?
Well, if he wins a Super Bowl before he's old enough to rent a car, that's going to be pretty cool, right? And, you know, look, I mean, he's been unaffected by the age thing ever since he took the job, and clearly he's a special, you know, level of coach. But, you know, I give him all the credit in the world. I mean, look, it's kind of ironic, right? Because Sean Payton is the one who's known as kind of the riverboat gambler. I mean, last week it was him who turned a game around with a fake punt. He turned a Super Bowl around once because he went with an onside kick to open up the second half. And, you know, you love to see that because, you know, I get it. There's a difference between being reckless and being, aggressive, I guess is the best way to put it. I know that's what drove Jets fans to distraction, is the fact that Todd Bowles for 5 years, was completely on the other end of anything that would be kind of considered, aggressive or gambling. But it's, when you see a coach that has that much confidence, not only in himself, but certainly in his team, that, you have to weigh what the possibility is if that fails, and yet he went ahead anyway. It's funny, you talk about probably the opposite end of the spectrum is Andy Reid, right? I mean, I don't think you necessarily blame this game on Andy Reid like you blame a lot of playoff games in the past, but I will say one thing. Kicked a field goal with 11 seconds to go in regulation at the 20-yard line with the best quarterback on the planet. I couldn't understand why you wouldn't take one more shot at the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
But,
sure.
And I'm not saying that would have worked, and really, I'm not saying you can pin that loss on him because of that, but it does, I get the sense that if Sean McVay were in a similar situation, he probably would have taken a shot at the end zone. That's just, and I could be wrong, but that's just, and I think that shows you what kind of a coach he is.
Mike, in terms of post-game comments, post-game remarks, were you more covering Saints or more covering Rams in the post-game?
Well, it was funny because we wound up really inundating with the Saints because of the call, because the call was all we wanted to talk about, all anybody wanted to talk
mm-hmm.
about. And it's like you're sitting there writing all this stuff, and you're like, wait, just remember the Rams actually won the game. They're going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But they have 2 weeks for us to flood the zone with writing about the Rams. I mean, today really was, in a lot of ways, for better or for worse, fairly run fairly, was about what the Saints didn't do as opposed to what the Rams did. But, it was very heavy. And it was just, it was unusual, as I'm writing kind of like on the run, I'm talking about how, during the course of a season, you'll always get the apologetic press release from the NFL on Tuesday or Wednesday. Well, they essentially got it 15 minutes after the final gun because, Sean Payton, walked to the podium and said that he'd already talked to the league office and they said they blew the call, which is record time, So it really was a lot about the Saints today, and it was an electric atmosphere, and it was one of these incredible kind of things that happen in sports. The moment that the game winning field goal goes through the uprights, and that would have been good from like 105 yards. It was an unbelievable kick. I mean, the entire place in a second goes quiet after being nothing but 117 decibels all day to where. Goff had to tape up his ear holes. It just goes silent in an instant, which is, one of the real remarkable phenomenons in sports.
Yeah, and last thing before I let you go, we often talk with the NFL about adjustments, and for all that Sean Payton is an innovator and, usually a guy we think of as making the adjustments, I thought that early on Alvin Kamara seemed to just be, eating up the Rams and the mm-hmm. passing game to Kamara. And then, you look at the second half and it seemed like it seemed like the Rams were, getting physical, doubling, doing things to try and stop Kamara. And then, all of a sudden Brandon Cooks became such a weapon in the second half. It seemed to me that, call aside, the Rams won and McVay and that group won the adjustment game.
And you could file the Rams on your kind of a secondary victim for the attention we're going to pay to that call, because you're right, the Rams deserve all the credit in the world for coming back from 13-0, for making the play when they had to, even after the blown pass interference. I mean, the Rams still had to make a pretty impressive drive in the teeth of a 2-minute drill, and they did. All that credit goes to them. All that credit goes to the coach, the quarterback, and the defense, and everything else that allowed this to happen. And I think that between now and Atlanta, we're probably going to be able to pay them back for maybe overlooking them today. But you're right, and I think that's what's impressive, and it's what's most impressive about the coaches we were just talking about, is that, you look for a coach, what kind of adjustments they make, that's what kind of Belichick's signature is, being able to figure it out on the fly, and a lot of other coaches can't. It looks like McVay is the kind of guy who could or who does, and that really is certainly one of the intriguing sub-stories, I think, for, watching the game within the game in 2 weeks, is watching those two coaches go at each other.
Yeah, it'll be the young Jedi Master against
Darth Vader.
Yeah, against Darth Vader, and certainly that's what we'll be seeing in the Super Bowl. A lot of those stories. Thanks so much, as always, Mike, and I hope you at least got some good gumbo or etouffee or something down there, and we'll catch up with you soon.
You know that I did, Lori. I always have my priorities in order. It's great talking to you.
Good to talk to you, too.